I always say that I left Iraq 40 years ago, but Iraq never left me.
This is Persona Grata, the official podcast of the Israel Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I'm your host, Tamar Schwartzbard. In November of 1948, as Jews in Israel and the Western world celebrated the establishment of the State of Israel, hundreds of thousands of Jews throughout the Middle East began packing their bags, preparing for a dark period in which more than two millennia of Jewish life in Arab lands and Iran would come to an abrupt end. This week, as we commemorate the expulsion of Jewish refugees from Arab countries and Iran on November 30th, we'll hear from Linda Menuchin, a Jewish refugee from Baghdad who was forced to flee Iraq in 1969. Today, Linda, who lives in Israel, is pioneering Israel's diplomacy efforts in Arabic on social media, building bridges between millions of Arabic speakers around the world and the Jewish state. Between 1948 and 1979, more than 850,000 Jews were forced to leave their homes, possessions, and loved ones behind as a wave of unprecedented violence and bloodshed targeted Jewish communities across the Middle East. This would eventually lead to the culmination of Jewish life in countries such as Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Algeria, and Egypt. Many of these Jews, close to 600,000 of them, found a new home and purpose in the State of Israel, where they rebuilt their lives and heavily shaped the young Jewish state. Linda, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
Linda was born in 1950 to an affluent, upper-class Iraqi Jewish family who lived in Baghdad.
I was born in 1950 when most of the Jews left Iraq. And I remember that I had a lovely childhood, very pampering. I was a spoiled child. I remember our neighbors. We used to play with them. On one side there were Armenians, on the other side there were Muslims, and it was a lovely childhood. At that time, Iraq really was a multicultural country. There were so many non-Muslims at the time, including Jews, that it was only natural at the time that you mingle and mix.
Iraq's Jewish community was one of the oldest in the world, dating back to 586 BC.
We were like 135,000 Jews in Iraq who lived, for at least 3,000 years. We were the eldest Jewish community in the Middle East.
This ancient and vibrant history came to an end in the mid-20th century after a series of anti-Semitic pogroms and violent incidents in which Jews were targeted.
For all the Jews, Iraq was a homeland and it was their own country. But in 1941, there was a pogrom in Iraq. And it was during the 2 days of beginning of June. At that time, there was no government. The government was toppled in Iraq. And the mob took to the streets and they first attacked the Jews outside in the streets and then in their own houses. So it was a terrible thing really for Jews. At the end of these 2 days, until the order was again settled, there were 180 Jews killed and a couple of hundreds injured.
In the early 1950s, shortly after the State of Israel was established, close to 130,000 Jews, 75% of Iraq's Jewish population, left Iraq, fearing that their lives were in danger. The Iraqi government confiscated all property and belongings from Jews who left Iraq.
So what happened in the early 50s that my father was, as a lawyer, was chosen to monitor all the assets of the Jews that were frozen at the time, because there was, in the parliament, they issued a law saying that whoever is willing to leave Iraq, he won't have the right to return, And on the other hand, he will lose all his assets. And that's what happened, that all those who registered to leave Iraq actually lost their assets in Iraq. After really the majority left by 1951, there was only a small community left, mostly in Baghdad and in Basra. And it was a very structured community. It's like in the US nowadays when you see, you know, the JCC and hospitals built by Jews. So it was a very organized community, although it was very small. And we had our own schools, elementary and secondary schools. And we had our own club, which was mostly for sportive activities, where we used to meet. So it was a closed community. Jews mingled mostly with Jews.
You mentioned that a lot of Jewish people left Iraq in the early 1950s, fearing for their lives. Why did your family decide to stay?
When the first tide of Jews came to Israel from Iraq, the country was not really well established to receive so many Jews coming to a newly born land. So all the letters that were coming from our relatives, everybody really advised us not to come and to wait until Israel will be fully fledged and will we be able to receive all these immigrants coming from Arab countries.
In June of 1967, shortly after the Six-Day War, Jews once again were targeted. They were dismissed from government jobs, their bank accounts were frozen, and they were confined to house arrest, amongst many other restrictions.
Following the Six-Day War, things started again to deteriorate in Iraq after this lull that we had beforehand. So after the success of Israel and the failure of Arab countries to defeat Israel, Iraqis also felt really that they were very much affected and hurt. So the first thing they decide to do is persecute Jews in Iraq. And the first thing we heard that we had to evacuate our own house that was owned by my grandfather. So they decided to kick us out in 1 month. And at the time, it was very difficult because all of a sudden, all the propaganda turned against Jews in Iraq, that there is a fifth column. That's why the Arab countries were defeated, because there are Jews who are fifth column.
Which means that they're cooperating with the Israeli government?
Yeah, which means that there are spies in the country who are releasing secrets, Iraqi secrets. And soon the Iraqis really started to knock on the Jewish doors and take men for questioning and, you know, under different pretexts, but mainly without really any reason. So they go there, some of them were detained and also badly hit, some of them were killed. And I remember a very bad incident whereby one of our family, Nassim Hacham Yair was his name, he was, I think, barely 40. He was taken from his place of work and he only came back in a Utah bag. So it was really a very trying time for all of us. I remember that we used to fast every Monday and Thursday and pray that, you know, nothing bad will happen to Jews. And of course, this situation went on until 1969, the beginning of the year.
In 1969, 12 Jewish men from Baghdad and Basra were taken into custody and charged with spying for Israel. Nine were hung on January 27th, and the remaining three were executed in August later that year.
I remember there was an execution of nine Jews in the central square of Iraq, Tahrir Square. I was at the time at home because Jews were refused to enter the universities. I was 19, so I was watching TV in the morning, and there I saw a big, big celebration around the bodies of the people who were hanged in the square, and there were a quarter of a million Iraqis celebrating around, and it was like a feast. I really cannot forget this image that I have always. It was the worst, and it was very sad because we knew most of the people who were hanged, who were accused of being spies, but their only sin was that they were Jews.
And as a public figure, was your father afraid?
Well, my father really, unlike many other Jews, was not afraid. He believed fully in his friends, the Iraqis, being lawyers or judges, that they would stand for him. And I don't think he never really thought that somebody will be after him. Or so he kept really his usual life. My mother, though, was really very much afraid because there was no faith even in your neighbors now, because the attitude was even anybody could just, you know, ring the mukhabarat or ring the security and claim anything about you as a Jew, they would come and pick you up.
Following renewed violence against Jews in the late 1960s, Linda decided that she had no choice but to flee the country that she had called home for most of her young life.
During the summer 1970, I started to be aware of many Jews leaving the country illegally. And even my mother started really to look for ways how to do that. My father was against that period. He believed in law and he didn't want to be involved in anything against the law. So I started really to ask friends how to do that. And eventually it was in late December that someone I know came to our house. And it was Thursday in the afternoon. He told me that there is a possibility for me and my brother to run away the next day. So wow. It's take it or leave it. He gave me instructions what to do to get disguised so that we won't be identified. And he told me that you could barely bring anything with you, just a small case. And if we get caught, we should claim that we were on our way for a short visit of friends in the north.
Who was this man who came to you?
He's a friend, a Jewish friend.
A Jewish friend. What do you remember going through your mind, just realizing that your life was going to change within a day?
I think I was so excited that I'm really going out of hell that I was thinking that a bright future is waiting for me, and that gave me really a lot of courage to run away, because it was a very frightening trip that we took.
What do you even take with you?
Well, just, you know, a couple of shirts and trousers and that's it. Not really much. Very, very small case.
Did you think there was ever a possibility that you were going to go back to Iraq eventually?
No. At the time, I thought that this is the end.
Wow.
Well, I was so angry, so furious. Although I was sad really to leave my friend, but the thought that, you know, everybody else, I mean, all the Jews will be joining us, was a real comfort, because at the end of the day, I knew that everybody is heading towards Israel or any other foreign country.
So, on a Thursday evening in the early 1970s, Linda and her brother packed a small suitcase with a few belongings and managed to escape Iraq. The two made their way to Tehran and eventually to Israel.
I had to flee to Iran. at the time, Iraq and Iran didn't have diplomatic relations. They mm-hmm. were at odds. So, and I was disguised like an Arab woman, all wrapped with a black cloth, abaya. Our challenge was really to cross all these checkpoints without being asked to present our IDs, because in the ID, it says Musawi, like Jewish. And if we are Jewish, then we are not allowed to be away from home just, you know, a couple of dozens kilometers, and we already surpassed that. So then we would be in trouble. We moved on from place to place until we got to Tehran. It took probably 3 days to get to Tehran, and from there the Jewish agency took care of us. Iran at the time was very friendly with Israel and with the Jews. We had family also living at the time in Iran, and very much close to the Shah of mm-hmm. Iran.
Mm-hmm.
The Jewish community was very well off there. And yeah, we had a great time in Iran until we came to Israel. It was, I think it took 1 week or so until we joined here our relatives in Israel.
Linda's mother eventually met her and her brother in Israel, but her father wasn't as lucky.
We learned from my mother that my father was detained. First time he was detained and questioned after we left immediately, and he was released. And another time he was again detained because he provided affidavit of support for all the Jews who were at least 120 who were caught red-handed leaving Iraq in summer 1970, and that put him in a very unpleasant situation, the least to say. So he was held in prison for almost 3 months, and then after 8 months my mother and my little sister managed to flee to Iran, and my mother came. But afterwards we were only communicating with my father, who was trying to get a passport. He believed that he is entitled to a passport, and he tried also to sell a piece of land he had and, you know, organize his financials. But unfortunately, it didn't materialize.
Wow, that must have been very hard.
Yeah.
The day before Yom Kippur, Linda's father, who was still in Iraq, was kidnapped and never seen again. Linda, like hundreds of thousands of other Jewish refugees from Arab countries, spent the next years in Israel, rebuilding what she had lost and creating a new life, home, and community.
Well, I could say that, you know, we came from an Eastern country with different sets of beliefs, of culture. So at the beginning, really, I didn't feel that I fit. I was a student when I first came here. I came to Mount Scopus and I learned Hebrew. So it was gradually that I came to know better the Israelis and the way they live, the way they think, the way they feel, that I developed this identity that I'm Israeli and I belong here.
Today, Linda works at the Israel MFA as an advisor on digital activities in the Arab world, building bridges between millions of Arabs and the Jewish state.
I work for the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I publish in Arabic, I publish in English, I publish in Hebrew sometimes. And what I try to make sure is that everybody knows about the other, because I'm really still on the seam line between Iraq and Israel. I believe in peace, and I believe in educating both sides about each other. because I think this is the only way where we can reach really one day peace among nations here in the Middle East.
One project that Linda and her team have worked on is a digital Israeli embassy in Iraq, an online Facebook page which aims to bridge between the Iraqi people and Israel by emphasizing the historic ties between Jews and Iraqis.
Many, many Iraqis who are writing about the good old days with the Jews, about how Jews were vital to the Iraqi economy at the time. We can see a shift in public Iraqi opinion towards Israel and towards the Jews. We receive a lot of messages on a daily basis mm-hmm. from people who would like to see, they express it vehemently, that we would like to see more Jews in Iraq, coming back, living in Iraq. They would like to communicate with Iraqi Jews here in Israel. And as a matter of fact, it is happening because there are so many Facebook pages which connect between Iraqis worldwide. And we can see that it's an open conversation, and people are sending pictures of Jewish houses left and pictures of holy sites for Jews. People are talking about their parents' memories of Jews. There are lots of really Iraqis who are longing to visit Israel and to connect with the Iraqi Jews. And it's not surprising that there was a poll conducted by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs here in Iraq that around 45% of Iraqis don't mind establishing diplomatic relations with Israel.
Why do you think that is the case?
First of all, Iraq doesn't have any conflict with Israel, nor boundary issues. The second thing is that the Iraqi Jews are really the bridge to Israel for the Iraqis in Iraq. And Israel is such a high-tech country that it has almost a solution to every problem in the world. That's how the Iraqis view Israel. Mm. So they are really yearning to connect with Israel, to bring in Israeli technology to Iraq and to benefit from this.
For someone who has lost so much, Linda remains hopeful and optimistic that one day she will be able to visit Iraq. Not just as a Jewish Iraqi woman, but as Israel's future and first ambassador to Iraq.
Well, I can tell you that my dream is really to be the ambassador of Israel in Iraq, and I do believe that one day it will happen. Hope I'll be around. I would like to tell all the Iraqis that Iraq is important to me as Israel is important to me, because a child, you know, cherish both parents. And I really wish Iraq to get on its feet and return to its glory, being again multicultural with freedom and respect to everybody.
From Tripoli to Cairo to Damascus to Baghdad, the State of Israel is committed to commemorating the mass expulsion of Jewish refugees from Arab lands and Iran. The Israel MFA will continue to campaign for the United Nations to establish November 30th as the official day to commemorate the grave injustices faced by Jewish refugees from Arab lands and Iran. This year, throughout November and December, Israeli diplomatic missions across the world will host a series of lectures, events, and screenings to commemorate the more than 850,000 Jewish refugees who were forced to flee their homes. To learn more about the Israel MFA's efforts to commemorate the expulsion of Jews from Arab lands and Iran, see the description of this episode.